May it please the court, I am Kyle Brenton for appellant, the City of Steamboat Springs. The issue in this appeal is whether a movable temporary length of rope looped around bamboo poles stuck in the snow constitutes construction under the Colorado Governmental Immunity Act, so that the absence of such rope can be negligent construction, thus giving rise to a waiver of immunity. It can't, for three reasons. First, because the placement of a rope line does not constitute construction, as that term is used in the Act. Second, because the absence of a rope line was at most a failure of design, which again does not give rise to a waiver of immunity. And third, because the placement of rope lines is part of the ordinary operation of a ski area, which again does not give rise to immunity. So first, on construction. There are really two aspects to the construction argument here. The first is the definition of the term, looking at the statutory structure, the definition of dangerous condition. And the second is the common meaning of the word construction itself. Now, looking at the definition of dangerous condition, the statute sets out three categories of activity: design, construction, and maintenance. But because the statute says there can be no waiver if the risk arose from design, the task for the court then is to determine whether the particular risk at issue in this case arose, which of those three categories the risk arose from. But to determine whether the risk here arose from construction, we first have to know what construction means.
Mr. Brenton, before you go on to construction, was there any evidence in the record about design?
The evidence in the record of design came principally from the testimony of Tim Fletcher, who was the head of the ski patrol at the Hill, and he testified that the city had never intended, for the 10 years in which the ski area operated, the city had never intended for there to be a rope across this 20-foot span between the fence and the sled shed. So that was the evidence. Now,
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes,
Mr. Penn. And first, let me say what is obvious. This case is horrendous. And all of us, everyone in this room, sends our hearts out to Ms. Ryan and her family. This
absolutely, Your Honor. I could not agree more. It's a horrible case. The city is nothing but
sympathetic. So I wanted to say that I have children the same age, and they ski, and it's horrible. Let me ask you, you just talked about Mr. Fletcher. What about Mr. Wilson's testimony? I mean, he said, or can be read to have said, that the intention here was to fully enclose this and to comply with the Sea Safety Act. Couldn't one read that to say the design here was that we were going to fully enclose it with either ropes or signs somewhere? And if that's the design, we go from there. I mean, you say the only evidence of design was Mr. Fletcher, and I understand his testimony. You could read Mr. Wilson's testimony as being somewhat inconsistent.
I don't think those two pieces of testimony are inconsistent at all, and I think for two reasons. First, even the district court at page 241 of the record recognized 8 different indications that led the city to believe that the area was closed, and talked about, you know, the presence of ground lines in the area, that there was an elevated portion and there was some conflicting testimony on this, but that you had to go up in order to get to this area. So intending that the area be fully closed is not inconsistent with a design that does not include a rope here, which is the specific condition that the district court analyzed.
Well, let me follow that up a little more. I think, and I understand your argument about intent, but one could read Mr. Wilson's testimony a little more. He said, we intended to comply with the Ski Safety Act, which says any entrance that's closed needs to be marked either with a sign or a rope. So couldn't you read that to mean that the design intended that there be some sign there? Now, I recognize there may be an issue as to whether this was an entrance to a run or not. That's a different issue.
Well, right, and we present that sort of the substantive argument on the language of the Ski Safety Act in our reply brief, and I'll sort of let that lie. Because I really think that there are two issues with applying the Ski Safety Act in that way here. First is that intent to follow the Ski Safety Act does not establish the design of the area. And this really goes to this argument, and it's made a couple of times in the answer brief, that intent equals design. And I'd really like to focus the court's attention on that those two things are not necessarily equal to one another. The Suikowski case from the Supreme Court says that the definition of design under the statute is to conceive or plan out in the mind the public facility at issue. Now, the intent to close the area or the intent to follow the Ski Safety Act does not rise to the level of specificity necessary to plan out or conceive the area. The intent is general. The design is specific. Intent is the goal. Design is the means chosen to execute that goal. And there's no question that the means chosen by the city did not include a rope in this particular
case. See, and that's the question. In this case, and I understand the distinction you're making, but what's the difference? If the intent is, I'm going to comply with the Ski Safety Act, which says I got to put up either a rope or a sign, why? What's different from design? What more is there to the design? I'm going to put up a rope or a sign. What more would you need to be to take it from intent to design, I guess is my question.
Well, what you would need, I mean, what you would need to take it from intent to design, and that's in the situation that you're talking about, is really an understanding of what the means is. You know, even just taking the small snippet of what you're saying with the Ski Safety Act, a rope or a sign. Well, ropes and signs are different. And, you know, the design is it a rope or a sign? Or is it a closure that is indicated in many other ways to the extent that they didn't feel it was necessary to have a sign there? And in fact, John Floyd, another patroller, testified that if the city had thought there was a need for a rope, it would have put a rope there at the time. Obviously, you know, in light of this horrible accident, things have changed. That's not really relevant before this court.
But, excuse me. When you refer to the city in the statements such as you've just made, are you referring to Mr. Fletcher and then the other ski patroller that you just mentioned? Rather than the city government or the city manager or the city director of ski safety or Mr. Wilson's title?
Right, absolutely.
Because I don't, you indicated that it was clear from Mr. Fletcher's testimony that the city never did intend to close off the top portion with rope. I'm not sure that I get that from his testimony. His testimony said we never did, as someone who was perhaps in charge of constructing this road, we never did that. But I don't get it from his testimony that there was any basis for finding that the city never intended to do
that. Well, the testimony that we've cited in the brief is that we never, in essence, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but we never blocked that off because we didn't think it was necessary. And again, that's confirmed by Floyd, who said that if we did think it necessary, we would have roped it off. So that's why we say that amounts to what the intended design of the area was.
Well, my question is this: is there anything in the record as to who controlled the design of the closure of the upper area? Mr. Wilson or Mr. Fletcher, or who was in charge of determining whether or not that was going to be closed, or whether the design called for closure?
Well, I think what you're grappling with, Judge Hawthorne, is this, there's a difference in the level of formality of what a design is from case to case. In, for example, a highway case, the level of design means blueprints, and it means hearings, and it means, you know, administrative procedures. In a case like this, and something that is sort of goes up and comes down every year, it's maintained on a day-to-day basis as part of the operation of the area, the design is certainly less formal than that. There's no question in the record that Mr. Wilson was Mr. Fletcher's superior. That there's no question about that. There, obviously, based on a review of the record, there was not a tremendous amount of discussion of design at the trial court level. That's, I think, largely because, as we discussed in the briefs, the district court sort of sua sponte, after rejecting the negligent maintenance argument made by Ryan, the district court adopted this construction argument that hadn't really been the subject of a lot of discussion or evidentiary evaluation.
Well, Mr. Martin, before we get on to the distinction between maintenance and construction, whether that was argued, I'd like to take a step back and look at how did we review this? Because my understanding in your briefs are that you didn't dispute the court's fact finding, and it looked as though the court was finding, not using the exact words, but saying that the intent was to completely close the area, and thus the flaw was not solely the basis, you know, right. Design was not the sole basis for the flaw. And so it looked to me that the court was fact-finding and maybe choosing Wilson's testimony over Fletcher's, and I'd just like you to respond to that.
Well, there's no question here, Your Honor, that the city intended for the area to be closed. That's absolutely undisputed. It was not disputed below. Once the Alpine slide went in, this was not an area that was meant for skiing. It was meant to be closed. Now, what the district court found in the order, the district court found that the city intended for the area to be closed, and it constructed a rope line to effect this enclosure. That's a near paraphrase, I think, of what the district court said. But missing there is really this step of design. Before I get to that, the question of the standard of review. The underlying facts are not in dispute. We don't dispute the underlying facts, what happened, when, what was where. The question is, what legal category do those facts fall into? Do they fall into the category of design, construction? So that is the question that we're asking this court to review, and that is reviewed de novo. But that finding, again, that the intent was for the area to be closed, it just doesn't amount to a conception or a plan for the area of how that closure is going to be implemented.
Well, let me step in a little bit, because I think the court's findings were the intent that area be completely closed, and then the court was contrasting that with a gap in the closure. And so, again, going back to, is that a fact finding? And again, in your brief, I understand that there was no dispute with the jurisdictional facts.
That's correct. Okay. We don't dispute the jurisdictional facts. And ultimately, what the court found was that it was intended to be completely closed. Absolutely. The court also found that the city believed that it was completely closed. Not completely enclosed. Obviously, there was a span here that was not blocked by a rope, but the court did find that the city believed that it was completely closed based on these other indications that the area was not to be entered. I see I'm short on time. I will just reinforce to the court what the Supreme Court said in the Medina case about design. In that case, design versus maintenance. The question is really, when did the risk arise? And the Supreme Court says that if the risk inheres in the design and merely persists until the time of injury, then it arose solely from the design. And here the risk that the district court found existed, arose when the city designed the area without putting a rope there, and it simply persisted through to the time of injury. So this risk arose solely from design. So I'll urge the court to reverse remand with instructions to grant the city's motion to dismiss, and I'll reserve the remainder of my time if that's all right. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Evan Banker, 39180. With me is Jim Shalott, and we represent Maureen Ryan, who's president in the gallery. There are three issues before the court, and three reasons the district court's order should be affirmed. The first and plainest reason to affirm the district court is exactly what you've been addressing with my opposing counsel. The district court made very specific findings of fact. What the intended design of the Alpine slide area and its closure was, what the actual construction was, and that the actual construction negligently failed to comport with the design. Government immunity, black letter law, is that negligence in the construction of a facility, including a permanent or temporary alteration thereto, waives immunity. Next, we also argue that there's sufficient overlap in this case between construction and maintenance that this court could affirm the order of the district court as an issue of negligent maintenance. The city's failure to keep the town view run in the safe and skiable condition in which it was originally designed before the installation of the Alpine slide is equally a matter of negligent maintenance as it is construction, thus waiving immunity.
Well, is this issue preserved? My understanding is the complaint only references maintenance, and really the focus of the hearing was on maintenance.
Your Honor, the issue of negligent construction or maintenance was before the court because we alleged a dangerous condition. The facts underlying construction and maintenance are so overlapping here, as they often do, and as the Supreme Court instructed us in Padilla that they may, that the district court found sufficient evidence to make a ruling on construction. The issue is before the court, and the court is entitled to satisfy itself as to its own jurisdiction based on the facts before the court. So, yes, it is preserved, Your Honor.
But what notice did the other side have about that? I mean, for example, in the January 11, 2013 hearing, Mr. Shalhoub said, it's our contention here, as is supported by the Martinez thinking, that this is a failure of maintenance. I mean, I have to say, I have some concern as to whether the other side had any notice that the court was going to decide this case based on negligent construction. What put them on notice that this was about negligent construction?
Well, the fact that the pleading alleged a violation of the Government Immunity Act in a dangerous condition, all of the elements are included in that, and it's a notice pleading, of course. And again, the facts just overlap so much. Did the plaintiffs in the underlying case, do we believe that it was a maintenance case? Yes, that's how we saw it primarily, and that's how we argued it. It doesn't make the facts any less before the court, and it doesn't divest the court of its prerogative to satisfy itself with its own jurisdiction.
While I stop you here, Mr. Banker, let me ask you, what do you perceive as the design here? What was the design, and what evidence supports that that was the design?
Sure. Well, first of all, the district court made a particular finding as the design. The district court's exact quotation is, the undisputed evidence is that the defendants decided to completely close the relevant areas of the Town View Run after the construction of the Alpine Slide and constructed the rope system enclosures to effectuate that result.
So let me ask you, couldn't you have it be fully this is a hypothetical for it. Wouldn't it not be fully consistent to say, yeah, what they designed was, we're going to close it on three sides, if you will, and we don't need to close it on the top because no one would think that's an entrance. Why would that be inconsistent with what the court said? It said they designed a rope system. Well, yeah, the rope system could well have been, I'm going to rope three sides and leave the top open.
Well, it's inconsistent with that particular sentence, because what the district court found is that the defendants decided to completely enclose, and then it says they constructed a rope system enclosure to effectuate that result, to effectuate the result of a complete enclosure. And in that sentence, what the district court is finding is that the intended design was a complete enclosure constructed of the rope system, which is concrete footings around areas of the Alpine Slide, PVC pipes, ropes, bamboos, all tied together to form a complete and integrated construction, which the court said was integral to the Alpine Slide area, to the dangerous condition of the Alpine Slide area.
So I'll bug you one more time, and I understand your argument. Okay, so let's accept that was what the court found and intended, fully enclosed by a rope system. What witness said the intent was to fully enclose it by a rope system?
The testimony of Chris Wilson and Craig Robinson supports the finding, Your Honor. Chris Wilson testified that it was his intent, and he was the director of Parks, Recreation, and Open Space. He was in that position at the time the Alpine Slide was first installed. It was his intent that the area be kept in compliance with the Ski Safety Act. The Ski Safety Act requires that closed runs, portions of runs, and this was on the Town View Run. There's no dispute about that. The map shows that it was an open part of the Town View Run before the installation of the Alpine Slide. The Ski Safety Act requires that closed portions of runs be closed, either with a particular sign that's universally recognized by skiers or by ropes or fences. And the district court made a finding of fact based upon the evidence that should not be disturbed unless it's clearly erroneous, that the intended design here was a rope system enclosure. Now, my opposing counsel had mentioned that the district court made some findings, and the city had argued that there were structures in the area, a fence, a guy wire, some shrubs that would indicate to any skier that the area is closed. To make a representation that the district court found that to be true, and this reads the order, the district court recited those facts and then said the defendant asserts that this would indicate that the area is closed. Craig Robinson, who is
only one position junior to Chris Wilson, was asked about those very structures. He was asked, does this create a closure? Answer, no. There was nothing at the top to indicate the area was closed, and to the contrary, what had happened by virtue of leaving that area unroped was it created a gate. And a gate is something that in the ski industry is universally recognized as an invitation to enter a run through this particular place. It was explained by Larry Haywood, who's plaintiff's expert, and even Mr. Fletcher at one point referred to the area through which Cooper skied as a gate. He was corrected on cross-examination, but twice referred to the area as a gate. And that's what the negligence in the construction is. By putting this rope line together in a way that negligently failed to completely close the area, as the city had intended, what it actually did was create an invitation to the dangerous area below.
Does it matter that there's the topography, if you will, there? It looked like from the picture, which was in there, even I know it was in your complaint, that you had to hike up a little bit, or a duck walk or a sidestep up. There was a bit of a hill to get in. Does that change the nature of whether it's a gate or not?
No, Your Honor. There are, as Mr. Haywood, I believe, testified, there are gates that require you to take your skis off to hike up to them. But in this case, the testimony was conflicting as to whether you needed to hike up to get into that area. Mr. Haywood, on a site visitation, which I attended as well, and Mr. Lipp was present, skied from the top of the Schnackenberg Palma to the area from which Mr. Larsh, from which Cooper began his descent, without stopping, skating, hiking, or removing his skis. So it's questionable as to whether it's possible to get there, and the district court was entitled to make its findings of fact based on that question. So on the issue of the definition of construction, I think I've exhausted the findings of fact of the district court, and that the court found that there was supposed to be a complete enclosure. On the issue of statutory construction, the word construction, the defense urges, or the city urges, a definition that would limit the city's liability and would impose immunity. The Bertrand decision teaches us that in the modern era of government immunity, waivers of immunity are broadly construed to permit victims of government negligence to seek redress. Immunity is a creature of statute and derogation of the common law. Conversely, reservations of immunity are narrowly construed. Here, the grant of immunity is for issues solely relating to design. If it touches on construction or maintenance, tie goes to the claimant. Close calls go to the claimant. Just how far does construction go? I would urge the court to look to the Walton case and the Padilla case together. Only by reading the two together do we see how far the Supreme Court has taken construction and what the plain meaning of the term construction means. In the Walton case, this is the case that involved the art room ceiling. There was an attic space over the art room that was always just simply left as an attic space. There came a point in time when the government decided to start using that space as a loft for storage. They sent Walton, the plaintiff in that case, up a portable ladder to the space to clean it out. She fell, and the ladder collapsed out from under her and sought redress for her injuries. The court held, obviously, there's the maintenance issue because she's cleaning, and that's a fundamental issue of maintenance, but also allowed the case to go forward on the question of construction without much comment. And it wasn't until the Supreme Court revisited its Walton decision in Padilla that it explained what the construction was in that case. And what it said was the government constructed a temporary access to the loft. Simply, they put a ladder up. And that was sufficient under the ordinary meaning of construction to waive immunity in that case. And what we have here is far more permanent than a ladder that's set up for the matter of half an hour or an hour, whatever it takes to sweep out an attic space. This was intended to be a permanent rope enclosure around the inherently dangerous area of the Alpine Slide. It had its permanent concrete footings, and it was set every winter to permanently keep skiers out. This isn't operation, this isn't the sort of thing that's so temporary or ephemeral as to be less construction than setting up a ladder would be.
I do have to touch on the issue, I believe, of operation. It was raised heavily in the city's briefs that this is really just a question of operation. Patrol set up ropes and bamboo all the time, and it's not permanent enough to be a matter of construction. The operation exception, which only appears in one case, which is Curtis, is really no more than a restatement of the settled law that a dangerous condition must be associated with a physical or structural defect of the facility. In Curtis, you had a water slide. One person goes down the water slide, the next person goes down the water slide and injures the first. And the only allegation there was that someone should have been there essentially to supervise. It was a negligent supervision case. And the court in that case called it, this is an operational function, but it was really nothing more than negligent supervision, which is the same thing that we saw in Padilla, in Loveland, in Douglas. All of these cases where the court decided there was no waiver of immunity for negligent construction or maintenance did so because there was nothing that touched on physical aspects of the facility like we have here, the physical aspect of the closure, which was integral to the construction of the Alpine slide. It's also entirely consistent with the statutory history, legislative history of the Governmental Immunity Act, which is something that's cited with approval in Loveland, which is a case in which Judge Gabriel concurred. The legislative history talks about waiving immunity for physical things, but not for natural objects. And that's entirely consistent with what we've got here. The legislative history says, in other words, ordinary negligence is sufficient to impose liability for injuries caused by the dangerous condition of artificial objects. There's nothing natural about the rope, bamboo, concrete footings, PVC pipes that the city intended to completely enclose the Alpine slide area. Your Honors, because the district court made specific findings of fact that have not been challenged as to what the city intended to do was to construct a complete rope system enclosure, that rope system enclosure was necessary to keep skiers out of the inherently and admittedly dangerous condition of the Alpine slide. And because the city negligently failed to construct that which it intended to construct, and instead created an invitation through its negligence to the Alpine slide, that Cooper accepted that invitation and it cost him his life. We ask that this court affirm the order of the district court. Thank you. First, I'd like to direct the court's attention to the district court's reasoning for rejecting the negligent maintenance arguments made by the plaintiff. This is a 244 of the record. The district court concluded that the original construction of the Alpine slide and the winter rope line enclosure did not include a rope line at the top of the upper closure area. Had the entry to the upper closure area been originally roped off or marked, the failure to continue to do so easily constitute an omission in maintaining the facility as originally constructed. Such is not the case, however. So what the district court is finding here is that there has never been a rope here. There has never been a rope here. So the question for this court, as I mentioned before, is whether that arose from construction or from design. And Appellee just now mentioned that concrete footings, that, and there was testimony in the record that at some areas of the hill there are concrete footings that these bamboo poles go into. There are no concrete footings in the 20-foot span. If there had been concrete footings there, that clearly would have been an indication that there was a design to have a rope there. But there was not. There had never been a design to be a rope there, so the lack of a rope cannot be negligent construction. I'd like to, just in the few seconds I have left, turn the court's attention to our argument about failure to warn. There's no question, under the Douglas case and the Jaffe case, that a failure to warn does not give rise to immunity in a recreational facility. The complaint of the plaintiffs here is not that the lack of a rope in this area is what injured the decedent. The decedent skied through the area was uninjured when he passed through the gap. The problem is the Alpine slide structures that were below. And the reason that he was there
is because he was insufficiently warned of that area. And the plaintiff's own complaint talks about a failure to post ropes or signs designating the area as closed. A rope line is not a physical barrier to entry. There's no question that the plaintiff's expert agreed that skiers can easily cut ropes. A rope line is a warning. Stay out of here. And failure to warn cannot give rise to a waiver of immunity. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. They are very helpful to the court, and we appreciate you being here today and sharing your thoughts with us. The matter will stand submitted to the court, and an opinion will issue in due course.